one of the most uplifting shows on radio, No Glass Ceiling, introduces women in business who do just that, run their business, and women in business roles that once were taboo. Join me now for No Glass Ceiling on Business Radio X. And welcome to another No Glass Ceiling, successful women entrepreneurs and key role figures within the Tucson business community. I'm Mark Bishop, and it's nice to have you on the BRX Network. Today, for fascinating women, we have Kathleen Gonzalez. She has a business called Big Picture Clear Path. And boy, does she have some tricks up her sleeve. Should you ever be considering, how do I get out of my road? How do I get clear to what I want to do in life? How can I just get on a straight road and get something done? Believe me, she'll have you moving mountains before this show's over with. Gemma Thomas, well, Children's Clinics, very big deal in Tucson. She's a native Tucsonan, an accomplished health and human services leader. She's a graduate of the University of Arizona with a Bachelor of Science degree in Molecular Cellular Biology. Sounds heavy stuff. Hi and welcome, Gemma. Hello.
Hello.
Nice to have you. Yeah. You know what might be good? If I put the mics on, that would be good, wouldn't it? Rebecca Knoll. Rebecca, I'm going to come to you in a moment because I haven't forgotten you. I was just teasing there. Brooke Nowak. Hello, Brooke.
Hi there.
She's the Vice President of Development and Community Relations for TMM Family Services, Inc. Correct?
That is correct.
That is correct. Brooke Nowak, you were born and raised in Tucson.
Yep.
And you attended St. Cyril's Cell Point. That's a famous school, isn't it, Cell Point?
I just had my 20th reunion last weekend.
Unbelievable. Mm-hmm. We might hear a bit about that. And, of course, you went to the U of A, University of Arizona. Well, some fun there. And last but not least, certainly not least, Rebecca Knoll. Rebecca, well, you like Becky, don't you?
Yes, I do.
All right, you've got it. Becky, she moved to Tucson for the second time in April 1987. And at one time, she was in retail grocery management. Until November 1996, when she started at the police academy as a community service officer. And, well, exciting at that time, Becky?
Very exciting.
You've had a remarkable life. You went on patrol for approximately 7 years.
Yes.
All right. What was that like? Can you share some experiences with the panel?
Well, you know,
period.
back in that era, we did not have a lot of females on the police department. So there was probably maybe at the most five of us in the entire division. So kind of breaking into it, and it just depended on the male. It was a very male-dominated field. So it just depended on who it was and how long they had been on. So a lot of the people that were just recently coming on tended to look at us in a little bit different light as compared to people that had been on for a long time. They were very questioning us, like, can you really handle this job? Can you really back me up if something goes wrong? Are you capable of doing it? So you really did have to prove yourself and be able to stand up for yourself. It's not a wishy-washy field. You have to be a very strong, independent person to be able to do that job, especially as a female.
Wow. I tell you what, you've got the old gumption, I would say. Brooke, you were born and raised in Tucson, as we touched on before, but prior to entering the nonprofit arena, you worked in corporate offices, Fox Restaurant Concepts, right?
Yeah, from Tucson, actually.
Okay, based in Scottsdale, aren't they?
Yes, their original restaurant was Wildflower, very first.
And where was that?
Wildflower over on Oracle and Ina.
Really? In Tucson?
Yep. Sam is a native Tucsonan.
The original one. How about that? And you were there from 2004 to 2011,
yep,
correct?
That is correct.
You aided in the development of the company.
Yeah.
You were there at the early building blocks.
Yeah. He was who taught me what I know about business.
Okay. So give us an idea of your duties. What went on at the Fox restaurants?
Well, back then, a whole lot of things, just because our corporate office, it was four of us, and we had several restaurants at that point. But I was so blessed to be able to learn a lot of different concepts of business solely because we didn't necessarily have someone available or could pay for someone to be in that position. So I kind of took it on. But what was lovely is I got to learn all these processes. And so that makes me more of a well-rounded business person.
Yeah, it would do. Well, you left this permanent, secure.
Oh, very
position.
Secure. Yes.
You left it in Phoenix and traveled halfway around the world to Nairobi.
That's right.
In Kenya.
What was the draw, for heaven's sake? Why would you leave?
You know, I heard the weather was good. Actually, you know what was funny is I went there during the rainy season. Uh-oh. And I was the only one walking around in the rain. You know, being an Arizona girl, it was like, oh, this is wonderful. They're all thinking, she's a crazy person. Like, I'm like, if you came from Phoenix, Arizona, you would be loving the rain too.
Right.
So, no, you know what? It was just something was in me that I just needed to, it was something I always wanted to do. And so I left everything and moved to Nairobi, Kenya to volunteer in its government's Children's Crisis Center.
Oh, that's lovely. Awesome. That's wonderful. Yeah. Well, we're going to be hearing a lot about that. Okay. Well, okay. Then, just one thing I wanted to clear up over there, abuse, neglect, that's the main.
That is correct. Most of our children were, though, you've heard of the lost children, you know, and most of our children were lost children. And what's amazing is we take it for granted, but mass communications, you know, they really at that time in 2011 did not have there. So if a little child accidentally wanders away from their village, they don't have the ability to even go on a newspaper to look up these children,
no,
you know, and so
no.
much of it, they end up getting lost.
Oh, I mean, if you were a mother, what, I mean, the wild animals out there.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you'd never know what the devil's going on, would
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. No.
Poor little things. Okay. You've got some stories to tell us from over there, no doubt.
Oh,
some wonderful
yeah.
things. Alrighty. We'll come back to you. Now, Gemma, you went on to complete your master's in social work with an emphasis on not-for-profit administration.
I did.
Is that saying that you knew you wanted to serve for the rest of your career?
You know, I did. I originally started my bachelor's degree with this idea that I was going to, I was determined to be a doctor when I grew up. And so I spent 4 years studying molecular and cellular biology. At the same time, I was managing a primary care, a private practice on the northwest side of Tucson. So I got to spend a significant amount of time with a variety of different physicians in a different, in a number of different roles and settings. And I decided, you know, maybe my strengths are not so much in the patient care side of healthcare, but more so in the healthcare administration. And so I looked at a couple of different master's degrees, and that was the one that I thought was going to serve me best, and so far, so good.
So far, so good. What age does a girl know that she's going to go down that sort of track, though? That's a lot of study, a lot of commitment, no social life, you know.
Well, you're right. I didn't have much of a social life there for a few years. I think I sort of knew that I wanted to be in a serving role from the time I was pretty young. I mean, I would say at early teens, I knew I wanted to give back to other people.
That's marvelous. Very nice indeed. And your professional journey began as an office manager, really, of a local physician practice, joining the children's clinics in 2015. You have served in various leadership positions, currently the chief administrative officer.
That's me.
That's a challenging role for such a young lady.
It sure is. It's a big position.
You've been pretty busy. You developed specific pediatric programs, right? Including family medicine and palliative care, authored and received numerous grants. Is that easy to do, those grants, to try?
Oh, don't get me started on grant writing.
You're right.
Especially government.
Not so easy.
Not easy at all.
And you led initiatives that have enhanced the lives of children and families in southern Arizona. You know, it's a credit to you. It really is. I mean, young people, you know, at that stage when you took this on, sort of looked out of themselves and wanted to give instead of take. That would be lovely for more to do that. Out of all of those, what do you feel is your greatest initiative?
Current, past, future? What do you want to hear?
Out of the lot.
You know,
I know it's a hard question.
It is a tough question. Let me think about it. Can we come back?
Yes,
to that?
We will. We're not going anywhere. Trust me. All righty, Kathleen Gonzalez, come on, get up from the table. Stop hiding. Thank you. Now you are. I had to think about this one. Multi-potentialite.
I love that word. I so loved it. There was a TED Talk where
Did you make this up?
No, it comes from a TED Talk that this woman gave, and she said, for all the people that seem to just go from career to career and business to business that are may just be like totally disconnected from each other, that we're multi-potentialites. And, you know, we do something and we say, well, that's cool. Let's do something else. And that we are the most valuable people in most organizations because we come with such a breadth of experience and we can see the overlap between different types of thinking, even like engineering and art.
Well, you have experience in the variety of fields.
I do.
Radio technician of all things in the wilderness of Alaska.
I know, that was so great.
To managing an art gallery in Santa Fe, la-di-da. You know.
Well, Alaska was so amazing. I got to fly helicopters all over the southeast Alaska and land on mountaintops with bears and things and hold a gun going, I hope the bear doesn't come.
Oh,
I hope the
bear doesn't come. God, on top of mountains. I mean, you flew these choppers?
No, I was with these crazy Vietnam vet chopper pilots that would just say, hey, there's some whales in the water. Let's go chase them. And we just go run across the water and chase them. And I'm just like, you know, going, okay, well, if I have to die, this is kind of a fun way to do it.
Let's have a look. What else? What was next? Oh, you published a feminist newspaper in the 90s.
Yeah.
A collective of 40 women, correct?
That was interesting.
To running a cattle ranch in northern New Mexico.
Yeah. That was, and I'll tell you the funny thing.
I'm just
thing
looking
about
at the
that.
Faces of all the panel, you know.
Oh, I love it.
Well, you know, when I came from Albuquerque, I was not, you know, a country girl. And so my first question on the ranch was, what's a steer?
Right.
I kept hearing them talk about steers and bulls and cows and heifers. And I'm like, well, what's a steer? And so I found out.
Well, I have a feeling that, Kathleen, you haven't finished yet either.
No.
I feel like I'm about to read a good novel, to be honest with you. And I sat down and started researching you. Tell us about some of the adventures. Let's talk about the Alaskan thing firstly. What on earth were you? How did you get trained in radio technology?
Well, when I started college, I studied engineering. That was my major. I ended up like kind of taking a shortcut and getting the associate's degree in electronics so I could just go out on the road and do work because I was kind of tired with school. And so, I had some friends up in Alaska, drove up there on the Alcan Highway, camped our way up there, which was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you heard about the guy that like had his house. He was living in a bus, I don't know, 30 yards off the road, and he got lost forever. You can do that there.
Really?
Yeah. There are fewer people in all of Alaska than there are in Tucson. And Alaska is as big as California, Montana, and Arizona, and Texas put together. So there are very few people there.
Well, do you think if the weather warmed up a little, there might be a, you know, absolute mass up there? Everybody will move.
Everybody in Alaska is a character, would be a character anywhere else.
Anywhere else.
Yeah, it's crazy up there. But it's beautiful. It's the most amazing.
I've heard that. Has anybody else traveled to Alaska at all? Everybody I know has done beautiful trips up there.
It's amazing there.
And it's more to the land, too, and mountains than just being on a cruise boat, right? Going down a big gorge or something, right? Because you don't really see Alaska, do you?
Well, there actually is something just about being outside, even on the water.
Okay.
It's just a feeling of nature and knowing that there are places there that nobody's ever put foot. You know, I mean, there's just like, it's mm-hmm. empty.
Except
and it's
Bigfoot,
raw.
Maybe. Yeah.
Except Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But I have been on several adventures. One of the times I was there, I was fixing some radios and got done. And so the helicopter picked me up and then I had to hang out with the helicopter pilots for a while because they had another run to make. And so we stopped and we put down by a river during the salmon run. And I had my little backpacking fishing pole and I pulled it out. And the fish were so thick in that river mm-hmm. that my hook was bouncing off their backs.
Wow.
As I was pulling it across and I was just like, oh,
the last
gosh.
Frontier, well and truly.
Yeah.
Heavens above. I remember seeing a movie. It wasn't a movie. It was a TV series I loved in Australia. Northern Exposure.
Oh, Northern Exposure.
Do you remember Northern Exposure?
Yeah.
Now, do moose or what do they call moose? Yes.
Moose.
Do they actually walk out onto the main track?
They do. They and bears.
Oh,
moose
my God.
And bears. Yeah. And yeah, you cannot go hiking in Alaska without a gun.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, people just like if you really want to have bells on your shoes and you want to have a gun with you and, you know,
but they don't go
gun.
After humans, do they? Unless it's food, they smell. I mean, they eat you.
Yeah, they will attack you.
Well, I'm not going to Alaska
you.
Now.
Yeah,
I've
you have
my
to.
Mind.
You want to be there
no, I
with somebody who
I don't
knows
like
what
killing
they're
animals,
doing.
You know, I couldn't yeah, kill right. animals, so that I don't want yeah. to. Anyway, let's move on something gentler. What about art as a painter? Were you a dealer or painter?
I was office manager for several art galleries in Santa Fe, which is at one point was the third largest art market in the country after New York and L.A.
Really?
It was above Chicago. Yeah.
I had heard people come from all over the world to go to Santa Fe.
All over the world to go to Santa Fe. It's a wonderful place to go see art. And being in the art business is like Christmas every day.
Really?
Oh my God, it's so fun.
How do you learn so much about that? I mean, you've got to know so much.
You know
if it's a fraud or not, you know?
Well, I mean, the way the business is set up, it's a business like any other business. And the artists are vetted, you know, before they get into the gallery. And so most of the work is just people. The thing about the art business is it's about people falling in love, people coming in the gallery, falling in love with something, and then just making arrangements for them to take it home. It's really an amazing business. And every day we get these packages of this most amazing art from these just talented, creative artists. And just to experience the way that these artists see the world every day, it's just a journey and an adventure.
Do you know, is it still third?
You know, 2008 really devastated the art market in the whole country. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea where
I don't
what
either.
The standing
that's
not,
that,
is
that would
anymore.
Be interesting to find out, because I do know Santa Fe is huge as far as the art world goes.
Yeah.
But I did not realize it was third in the nation.
Right.
So it'd be interesting to see if it still was.
I'm not sure, because like I said, the 2008 really devastated the art market in the United States. So I'd be interested in finding out, too.
Well, things are coming back, so you never know. Now, let's get on to your paper. You published it in the 90s.
Right.
What was hot in the 90s, girls? What was a current topic at that time? I'm trying to figure
out.
Well,
women's, women's liberation was really big.
That was it.
And we were trying, you know, Becky, you know, you were in a business where it was male dominated. And I'd come from being an electronics technician in a business that I was working in a hangar with 400 military people, all men. There were two other women in the hangar, and they were both secretaries, and I was a technician. So it was that kind of situation. And so when we started the paper, we wanted to do something. Came out of journalism school and had been working in a couple different newspapers, and decided to do a community service newspaper for women. And it was called Embra, and it was about empowering women. And we had 40 women who were a collective. And that's always interesting, working in a collective. And that was really awesome. And I mean, I had an editor, and I had an advertising manager, and we had, you know, people who just took over the different roles that you need in a newspaper. I was the publisher. And so I just made sure it got out every single time. And we just, you know, handled the newspaper. It went out monthly, and we had a listing of all the services for women in the state of New Mexico, and we published throughout the state of New Mexico.
Cool.
And it was a monthly publication.
Well, that was a bit before its time, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, it was really great. You know, we could do that online now, but then, you know, you really needed the
things
paper.
Things were different. And what was it called again?
It was called Embra.
Embra, which is Spanish for?
Female.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go. You learn something every day.
Mm-hmm.
Gemma, your website quotes, "The clinic is a place of daily miracles. It is a place where loving families, dedicated providers, and inspired administrators come together to improve lives. We may not always cure, but together we almost always make it better."
That is a quote from our medical director, Dr. Sydney Rice.
Very good, because I was going to ask you who the devil wrote that, see?
Yeah, she is man, she should be on this show. She is an incredible human being.
Yeah, well, let's book her. We'll get that organized. Dr. Sydney Rice, medical director.
She's a medical director at Children's Clinics. She's a developmental pediatrician at Banner, and she has transformed so many children's and families' lives in Tucson. We are so fortunate to have her on our team.
Sounds like a dynamite. What types of services do you provide now?
You know, we are a bit of a hidden gem. We are an outpatient center for kids with complex illnesses. So in one convenient location, we have primary medical care, so your general pediatricians. We have a med-peds physician who can see children and adults. We have a full rehabilitative therapy team. So that's physical therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, registered dietitian nutritionists, and audiologists. We have a tremendous specialty medical care team as well that is staffed by physicians from Banner, from Tucson Medical Center, and from the Arizona community in general. And we have pretty much every pediatric specialty you can think of: cardiology, neurology, pulmonology. And then on top of that, we just integrated a few years ago and added behavioral health services.
You're listening to Gemma Thomas. She gave up her life to say, I want to help and cure others, which is marvelous. And she studied molecular and cellular biology. That's huge now, isn't it? More so than it's ever been.
Yes, it is certainly a growing field. You know, biotechnology and biosciences in general are growing, at, you know, just as fast as technology.
Yeah. So give us an example of the kinds of children that you'd see there and their experiences.
Sure. So we take care of kids with conditions like cerebral palsy or spina bifida. We're piloting an autism center of excellence. And really our model is to look at a family's life and think about what it's like to have a child with complex illnesses. So as an example, if you have a child with spina bifida, you need to see anywhere around 5 to 10 different specialists. And so if you don't come to children's clinics, you are taking up to 5 to 10 days off from work every month, or pulling your kid out of school for 5 to 10 days.
It's hard on parents.
Sure. Driving to 5 to 10 different offices. So we have a multi-specialty approach where we have every specialist that you might need to see in one place. You show up for one appointment, you sit in one exam room, and then your pediatrician will come into your room, your physical therapist will come into your room, your neurologist will come into your room, your social worker will come into your room. You see everybody that you need. We have one electronic health record, so everybody has access to all of your medical information. It's a really impressive approach to healthcare.
Yeah, it certainly sounds that way. I like that idea. No one misses anything then, right?
Nobody misses anything.
As long as it's updated, of course.
As long as it's updated, which we do.
Outside of medical care, what else does the clinic do?
That's a great question, Mark. So we really pride ourselves on being able to provide exceptional health care, but we have kids who come to the clinic from the time they're born until, you know, they're young adults, and we spend a lot of time with these kids and their families. So we've recognized that it's not enough to just pay attention to medical care. So we do things like have an accessible Halloween party, which we'll be doing next week.
Oh, that'd have a ball with that, wouldn't I?
It is a ton of fun. We have an accessible haunted house. We have inclusive trick-or-treating. So for our kids who might not be able to enjoy Halloween candy, we have non-food treats for them. We do a big end-of-the-year holiday celebration for our families. We have a back-to-school event where we help our kids get ready for the new school year. And we have a spring festival. So we really try to pull our families together for fun things, not just poking
nice.
And prodding.
Yeah. That's lovely. Well, I got to ask you, how are all these services funded?
You know, we primarily serve the Medicaid population in Arizona. So these are access-insured patients. But we accept all insurances. A number of our services are charity care as well. So we do some fundraising. We have exceptional partners through TMC and Banner who donate services and contribute to our mission. And then we have a philanthropic partner, Square and Compass, which is a group of Masons and Shriners in town. They own the building that we live in, and they let us live there rent-free. Which is a huge expense.
Well, that's a help.
It's a major help. We couldn't do what we do without them. And then also, as I said, some support from the community as well.
Well, I tell you what, it's amazing. It sounds like a marvelous organization, what you bring together. How can others, anybody listening, how can others support the clinic or get involved if they wanted to?
You know, there's all sorts of things that you can do to get involved at the clinic. You can go onto our website at www.childrensclinics.org.
Children's Clinics.
With an S.
Dot org.
Yep.
Okay.
There's an opportunity to volunteer with our kids, either regularly or at one of our events. You can actually come out. We have an adaptive recreation program. So our kids ride adaptive tricycles in El Tour de Tucson, which is coming up next month. You can come cheer our kids on there. You can donate on our website and more. Can always give me a call too, and I'm happy to connect people.
There you go. There's plenty to do, but these days and age, the easiest thing is go to the website, and then everything leads off
from
there.
Go to the website. Everything's there.
It's got it. All righty. And just before you go, mention the website again.
www.childrensclinics.org.
Okay. Now, let's go to Kenya, shall we? The government's home for its lost children. Explain that again to us.
So it's the lost and children who are abused. And so there was just one major home through the whole country of Kenya. you know, where the kids would go. And it was just a tremendous experience. It's beautiful culture, beautiful people, you know, but it also makes you appreciate what we have here in America.
Oh, spoiled,
you know, I mean, I know
here.
That we're not perfect, and I know that there's a lot of things that maybe could be better for people, but I also, it's truly unbelievable what we have here. I mean, we are women sitting here because
live
we live
for 3 months
America.
Over there like that. Yeah.
Oh, sort of absolutely. I mean,
was there any fear of any personal danger to your own health, though? You know, any guys running around with guns, any dangerous boogeymen in the bushes, you know?
There's always those things. That's why you make sure you go and prepare yourself before you go over there. Make smart choices.
Right.
You know, one of the biggest things is you don't get in a taxi cab if you don't know who that taxi cab driver is, because that's one way that they can drive you. You know, you make really smart choices. And that's sometimes where sometimes people traveling abroad don't necessarily.
They're a little gullible.
Yeah.
That way.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, you can't prevent everything, but you can definitely prevent some of the obvious situations. You know, you don't wear jewelry when you're walking around downtown Nairobi. You know, don't bring out your cell phone and be talking on the phone, you know, because these are people who are literally choosing between, okay, if they steal from you, then they can actually eat that night or feed their, their children.
Sure,
you know,
sure.
It's a life or death situation. And so they're sometimes willing to do whatever it takes.
Right.
You know, and so you just have to make the right choices.
Incredible experience.
Yeah.
How did you get into that role? Were you approached by someone, or do you think you were led to finding out about this opportunity
another
way? I
just always wanted to. I knew it was in the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
And actually it was my father's best friend. He kind of just was like, do it. You've been wanting to. I had just turned 30 and, you know, had a pretty cushioned life my whole life and just thought it was a great opportunity at that point. I honestly thought, though, when I would get back, I'd go right back to Fox. I just, that was my plan, was to get back and get back in the swing of things.
Mm-hmm.
But once you go over there, it's a whole, it's life changing, you know? And I realized that
all your priorities change, right?
Yeah. And that I serve a different purpose,
right?
You know, utilizing maybe those skills that I was able to learn so that I can serve, you know, the common good. Ended up being back in Tucson. And so ended up staying and realizing that, you know what, with what I want to do, this is the best place, you know, because there's still a tremendous amount of poverty here in Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's still one of the
Very
fastest growing poverty, poverty rates in the nation. Absolutely.
Yes,
and so the Tucson that I knew growing up, it wasn't good when I got back and I had just been living in Nairobi, you know, and traveling throughout the rest of the continent and being shocked by some of the things you see here in Tucson. You know, it's like, wait a minute, there's something wrong here if I'm shocked by what I just saw, given that, like, you know, we're.
It upsets me terribly.
People would have gun, you know, machine guns, you know, around the. So it just was a little shocking, but there is tremendous breakthrough that I've seen in the past 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's definite turnaround, but we just still have to stay on the momentum.
Yes.
You know, and understand that we, you know,
working
have
together.
Working together and stay, you know, positive. And, I see that with what I do, the important thing is that's why I'm committed to housing, but especially housing for kids, you know, and giving them that stable place.
Well, it would be fair to say then, Brooke, in all honesty, that your experiences in Kenya, what led you to change your career path and join the workforce of the nonprofit world?
Absolutely. Oh,
it was
absolutely.
Automatic flow on, right?
It was just, I worked a little bit. When I got back, I didn't go back to work immediately. I was helping. And I'd work a little bit in the restaurant world. And I realized, oh, wait a minute. This is just my passion has gone. And this is a company that I loved more than, you know.
Right,
and I'm like,
right.
Wait a minute, why isn't that there? So, and I did have fun in Kenya, too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we went over and white-water rafted the Nile River in Uganda.
Right.
That was a pretty awesome experience.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, and TMM actually gave me the opportunity. It was kind of funny when I first got here. I'm looking for a nonprofit job, and this is when nonprofits were still kind of closed to necessarily for-profit mindset. And here I have this unbelievable resume, but I had no volunteer or I'm sorry, excuse me, nonprofit work.
I found that myself.
And I was like, no one would even give me the time of day. I'm like, really? You know, like what? But TMM did, you know.
Well, smart for them.
And so,
you know why? Because all those days, it was all about private givers. You called it there before, you know, I just got a mental block for a minute. But special donators always and the hot list and all of that. Now it's a business like anything else. And,
that's right.
And you have to get out there and market, and you have to work hard to get donations.
Yeah. And it's, what they don't realize so tough, is those private donors that they're talking givers, well, guess what? That's who I used to work with.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
So I can much easier get in and get a phone call into there than most others. So,
well, that's it. You know, when you look and you go to Kenya and those poor little kids, lucky to get a feed, right, in some cases.
Oh, yeah.
And you see the waste each thrown out of restaurants. And that would...
That was one of the hardest. It's so much better now, but especially when we'd open a new restaurant, it was so hard. We would try to just get the food. And that back then it was... Yeah, like I said, a lot harder than it is now to get the food out because the amount of waste. And, you know, we just take it for granted. Like, for instance, the mall that we used to go to in Kenya, 1 year later was that horrible massacre, you know?
Right.
And so
you take that for granted.
Like, you know, we really just get in our car and we're so busy with our day. We don't stop to think about some of the horror or the trauma that people... See.
Well, you know, there's other stuff. Now, let's talk about TMM Family Services. For 5 years, you've been there now. So give us an overview because there's a lot involved.
Oh,
TMM.
Yeah. Okay. So TMM was formerly Tucson Metropolitan Ministries, hence the TMM.
Okay.
They were instrumental in the development of some major nonprofits here locally. You've heard of Miracle Square Apartments, formerly Travelers Aid, and then actually the Community Food Bank.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, they became their own nonprofit. Ms. Knoll is on our board, has been for a long time, knows us. And over time, we have become our own nonprofit, and we really have a sanctuary. We'd look at 9 acres over at Pima and Country Club, where we provide housing for the most disadvantaged individuals. I mean, these are, for 25 years, we had foster children. We also have transitional housing for at-risk moms, their kids. And this is a housing program where we help them transition with the goal of they are self-sufficient at the end of their program. We also are opening up on Wednesday our brand new affordable housing for seniors and veterans. And when I speak of affordable, I'm speaking of low income. And we did that in conjunction with the Pima County and City of Tucson. They were tremendous partners for us in that. And so many people don't realize that seniors really, especially with the changes and the cost of the property, how it's increased in value, which is great for property owners, but for those who are renting, unfortunately, it's not.
It puts it out of reach.
Yep, and people don't realize it's a senior who makes $1,200 Social Security, you know, and that's kind of actually more than average. Mm-hmm. But if they don't have any other investments, a lot because of the 2008 recession, as they were talking about the art world, which I do have a degree in art, so I understand. But so many of them just have that income of $1,200, and people don't realize that that income of $1,200 puts them at 30% of the area median income, which means that they are extremely
Definitely.
Poor.
Definitely.
Yep, extremely poor. And so where are they going to go? You know, where are they going to live?
You know.
And they're walking targets, too, you know. And
you know,
so
you can make beautiful little homes for $10,000 and less.
Yep.
Right? You can make homes for $5,000 and less.
Maybe you can invite me in about 3 months.
Right.
Okay, back. Well, and so we can talk.
And I've also seen how they make igloo homes and round homes. Donated land wouldn't be that hard to get around Tucson.
No.
And some of the empty warehouses, well, yes, okay, more companies are coming in. But there are opportunities.
Oh, there are.
People just won't get out of the darn square, will they?
No.
And get it done.
Yeah,
you know?
And but downsizing, there are some amazing. There's this one woman, Elizabeth Singleton, and we're lucky to be able to get to work with her. She does tiny homes. And let me tell you, any one of us would live in these tiny homes.
Oh, yeah.
And she does them for the homeless veterans in Maricopa. Luckily, our homeless population for veterans here has been taken care of.
Right.
There's a number of homes, but in other communities here in Arizona, they're not. But we are looking at other ways, innovative housing, because the project that we just did with the county is something we're very proud of.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 2-bedroom, 2-bath floor plan, and it's a split floor plan so that the senior can have a living caretaker.
All right. That's a good idea.
20 units was $3.2 million, you know, and so that's a lot of it's a lot of money. And so how can we also serve that population and be as most efficient? Because the dollars keep getting less and less, you know.
But that age group is getting more and more.
And more. Exactly. Right. And so it's and they're not growing together or they're growing in the opposite directions. And so we're very much trying to think of new and innovative ways so that we can still provide that housing. Because housing is, it's called Maslow's theory. You know, there are certain things that someone must have in order to be successful in life, you know. And the basis of it is housing.
Just a roof over your darling.
Just a roof over your head. You know,
your castle, somewhere that you can call home.
That makes you feel safe.
Makes you feel safe. That's the key.
It's almost a preventative, too, because once someone has, you know, their own housing and they stabilize, you know what? Their needs for other services start to diminish, you know, and most people want to do it on their own.
Self-sufficiency,
it's
cool.
It's self-sufficiency. And so they just need that opportunity.
Well, each year, TMM, I mean, over 3,000, you help individuals stabilize, become more self-sufficient every year. Now, this main campus sits on 9 acres in the heart of Tucson. It provides transitional housing for at-risk mothers. Now, I want to do a breakdown with you on some of these. At-risk mothers and their children. What's an at-risk mother?
So an at-risk mother is a single mother who's generally at about $14,000 to $16,000 a year, you know, and has 1 to 3 children. And these are moms who maybe about 70% of those who we serve are severe domestic violence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these are a mom who maybe just left severe domestic violence or maybe got out of rehab. And they're not used to being the breadwinner. And so they're able to come to our campus, you know, and live in a very safe and controlled environment.
Do you teach them any responsibility?
Absolutely.
This all goes
down
with it as well.
Yep, there's many different. We talk to them about their education goals, their career goals. And there's a variety of different things. What is their goals for their children? We teach them healthy boundaries even.
Right.
You know, how do you allow your children to speak to you? How are outside influences? But we also have different policies in place to help keep that mother on the right path.
Right.
You know, we have a very strict visitor policy as far as no males on in that one area for the moms, because we really want them to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, perfect example is one mom, when she moved in, she was working 2 jobs at minimum wage just to make ends meet. Well, when you talk to this mom, she had the experience and the skill set to be, you know, a much higher level of a career.
Mm-hmm.
But she never turned on a computer. So how is she going to put together a resume or start searching for other jobs? You know, and so it's just helping her put that resume together, getting her, you know, how to search for new jobs. She immediately got a job. She's working now 9 to 5. At home with her kids at 5 o'clock at night and making more money.
Total turnaround.
Those little opportunities, that's what we try to blend for them. And we work with a lot of partner agencies because we are experts at housing, but we're not at behavioral health or we're not at all these other, at employment. So we go to the other agencies to best fit the needs for those that we serve.
TMM, all about them. We've touched on seniors, veterans, mentally fragile persons. They're always left alone, aren't they?
Oh, they are. And so many of the situations we see, you know, there's a lot of mental and, you know, health problems with those that we see. You know, maybe they can't get stabilized, especially if they're living out on a street. Yeah.
And seniors are kind of a forgotten generation.
Oh, they are.
There are so many families. You'll find that they can't take care of them either financially, or they don't have anywhere to put them under their own roof. So they'll place them in a home and then they go back to whatever state they live in. And these people never have anybody to talk to. They don't have anybody to take care of them. And then trying to get needs for them, it's like you would be surprised of how all the doors just keep being closed. I'm trying to help a neighbor right now, and he's 55, but he is disabled. He's had a stroke. He's in a wheelchair. He's a vet. And Adult Protective Services showed up at his door the other day. We don't know who called, and they left him this list of phone numbers. He's called all of them, and he doesn't qualify. He's too old for Meals on Wheels. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter his situation. He isn't bad enough for this. He's too good for that. Blah, blah, blah.
Sounds out like my resume.
Out of all of these phone numbers, he's got nothing.
Yeah. That is disgusting.
He's back to the beginning of no help.
Yep, and that's what happens is there's
and
so
often
many.
Somebody that fought there for us to enjoy life the way it is today for us, you know, that's hard.
So there's a couple other things I just want to miss. We also have 80 units up in Marana called the Marana Apartments, and that's all low-income housing for up in the Marana area. And we have our restore over at 22nd and Country Club.
I was going to touch on that and come back. Yeah, the Marana Apartments. You're doing a great job. Just relax. Take a breath.
Just didn't want to forget about those.
Well, how could we forget about them? Very good. Very good. Take this interview. Of course, it's 24/7, 365 on the Business Radio X Network here in Tucson on Tucson Business Radio. It's there forever. So you can go and stick it under your boss's nose, all right? Or you can send this off to somebody that wouldn't give you a job once before. Remember that? Would that be funny to do, eh? To this, to that. Oh, I'm so sorry. Where were we, Becky? We were onto something before. You retired in January 2016. But
I did.
You haven't been able to sit still.
No, I haven't really retired. I've been working ever since.
She's currently a volunteer coordinator at TROT. T-R-O-T, which stands
for Therapeutic Riding of Tucson. Absolutely.
Tell us about it. I've heard this. Is it as good as this? Vets, disabled children, cerebral palsy, all sorts of...
Autistic, Down syndrome.
They get on these horses.
Has been spoken
And within
about.
A period of time, they well, have it is great improvements.
Absolutely. Well, it's absolutely amazing. We have a young boy, and he had been with us for just a few weeks. He had never ever taken... He was nine. Had never walked. He had never spoke. He would not make direct eye contact with anybody. So he was in his own little world. After being up on the horse for 3 weeks, he was high-fiving his sidewalkers, which are the people who walk beside him on each side of the horse to for their safety. He was making eye contact. He was trying to say whoa and walk on. So even though they weren't totally formed words, he was trying to make that sound, which was amazing. And within 6 weeks, he was walking from the horse to his mom at the other side of the arena.
Wow.
And he had never, ever walked before.
That is
It's amazing
great.
What happens.
That is so great.
Kids that have never, ever spoke before that are 7, 8, 9 years old, for their parents to hear them say for the first time, I love you, mommy, it's just earth-shattering for them. They're just so excited because they've never, ever been able to have that type of a communication with their child before. But people don't realize what horses can do for your core and the muscles and helping them to be able to start sitting up on their own instead of slouching over and needing somebody to help keep them up in the saddle. They start being able to sit up by themselves. They start being able to walk and take these steps. Because of the movement on the horse.
I mean, that's a big thing. It's like getting your balance back.
It's huge.
And they must feel independent with that.
Absolutely.
And that must give them psychological strength.
Well, it does. For instance, Mateo, that I was speaking of, is now in a cheerleading class.
Oh,
he is now, yes, he is now, I mean, you know, he's not like cheerleading like we think of it, but he's come out of his shell enough, and this is a boy that wouldn't even make eye contact. That now he's there doing cheers and clapping and the whole shabam, and it's amazing. So they do, they come out of their shell and they start speaking and interacting with kids. Mm-hmm. And we even teach them, we have an awesome program director, and she's so good with these kids, and she gets them learning courtesy towards each other and the interacting. So, you know, look over at Emma and say, you know, welcome or good job. And so they start having to do that, you know, look over there and say, give her a high five. And so she gets them all interacting with one another, which they've perhaps never done before either. And a lot of these kids have a hard time in school. And so it's helping them with their school functions too.
Becky, I just have to say thank you because I know several of our kids at the clinic.
I was going to say
services at Trot, and
good.
You guys make an incredible difference.
Oh,
in their
thank
lives.
You so much! When you were speaking, I was going to say, oh my gosh, that sounds like our kids at Trot need to be going
kids,
over there.
I am certain of it.
That's
so
wonderful.
Thank you.
Absolutely, thank you.
And even in your early days, you were helping people. I was reading in your history when you worked on that patrol for approximately 7 years, but crime-free multi-housing program for the TBD. You restarted that along with Neighborhood Watch. Is that right?
I did, and it's all about, unfortunately, an officer out on patrol, apartment communities tend to be our highest call generator. Whenever you have, let's say, a 300-unit apartment community and you've got people sharing ceilings and walls and floors and the whole shabam, people maybe they had lost their house and now they're in an apartment and they're used to being able to crank up the radio or they don't have to worry about you know, if they have an argument with their spouse or significant other, that it's going to disturb somebody. Mm-hmm. So it's all mm-hmm. about trying to train them on how to live amongst other people.
Being
now,
boxed
really.
Up.
And exactly.
Yeah, you know.
And so that would always be our biggest call generator. And so the Crime Free Multi-Housing Program was to educate the managers and the owners of these properties on how to try to make that property as crime free as possible. And so that cuts down on calls for the police department. It makes all of the people who live there feel safer and more comfortable. Mm-hmm. And it's just a win-win. So that program was all about teaching realtors, homeowners, anybody that had rental property, different paperwork to use, how to hold the tenants accountable, and teaching the tenants how to hold the landlords accountable, because it works both ways with the landlord-tenant law. And so it was just it's a hugely successful program. It's still going on.
Well, you took the thing nationwide when you traveled with this.
I did. I ended up becoming the executive director of the Crime-Free Multi-Housing Association, which is an international program. So then I started traveling across the nation and into Canada to train other agencies about the program and to help them get the program started.
Well, you're very good at what you do. I mean, you enjoy public speaking. And you teach personal safety to various groups.
I do.
How does that work? What's that?
Well, briefly? Anybody who would be interested, when I was with the police department, so many people in large companies, Chanel and Wimmer downtown and all types of places would reach out to me. So I do teach to groups. I've gone out and done SAVI, Southern Arizona of the Visually Impaired. I have done senior centers, teaching seniors, because seniors, elderly, and women, seniors, and handicapped people are three of the top groups to become assaulted and attacked because they're easy targets.
Right.
So I go out and I teach those types of groups. I just did at the Arizona Multi-Housing Association dinner last Thursday. We had over 100 participants, and so I went and I was the guest speaker and put on a personal safety presentation, trying to teach people how to be aware of your surroundings and to pay attention to what's going on. So
what got you into law enforcement in the first place?
You know, it's funny because when I hear these people that never knew what they wanted to do in their life, I've known what I wanted to do since I was a little girl. So my entire life, I had planned on being like Perry Mason. I was going to be a criminal attorney. That's what I wanted to do. I was going to be a criminal attorney. And everybody tried to talk me out of it and said, there's no money in that. You should go into business or corporate law. And I was like, ugh, that sounds so boring. Mm-hmm. Well, then I ended up with my grocery management job, got promoted into management back in the 80s. And I was one of five females in the entire United States with this company. That was the fifth largest company in the United States. I was only one of five females that was in management. So it was exciting. And I was making twice what a cop or anybody was making. So then I got promoted and got sent to New Mexico, where I met my husband, ex-husband now, and ended up raising two children and kind of got sidetracked. So I never did finish pursuing, you know, becoming an officer and all of this type of stuff. And so at the ripe age of 40, I ended up being told about this, you know, community service academy. And so I went to that, and
one
the rest
thing
is history. So I took some sidetracks, but I finally was able to use my Bachelor of Science degree in criminal justice and my passion and be able to put it towards that field.
See, that's the beautiful thing about life. You never know where it's going to take you next,
right?
You
never know. Yeah.
You know, you might have a plan, you think. There's nothing wrong to have a big plan.
Right. And
are there many obstacles then and challenges for women in law enforcement?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
All the time.
We would show, like, you could show up on a call, and it's not as bad today, but there's still those people out there that you could show up and they'd go, well, where's the real officer? I'd be like, well, you're talking to him. And they'd be like, you? And you're like, yes, me. Mm-hmm. And so it's just that having to constantly prove yourself and being questioned.
Right.
And, you know, what can you do? Can you handle the job and that type of thing? So.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've come a long way. Look at today. I mean, look at the wonderful women I have on the show today. And no glass ceiling. You know, I've done this now over 3 months with so many incredible women in Tucson.
Absolutely. Well, everybody sitting at this table has had to break through in their
amazing
field
it
and
is
prove themselves in some aspect.
Leaders in the field. That's why I enjoy it so much. They motivate me every time. Out of all the things, all the causes that you've done now, and with your help out there at Trot, what do you think's your, I'm not going to say favorite, what, from the way you spoke before, this gets to your heart. There's no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
Would you put this as number one? being a
trot? I'd have to put trot number one currently. When I was with the police department, that was my passion. I mean, I was good at it, and that's probably what everybody said is why I was so good at it, is because I was passionate. I did care. And so everybody that I went and took reports from got that impression, and they could tell that I actually cared about them. They weren't just a report that I had to take and move on. And so that was probably my one of my great fortes. So what I wanted to do from the time I was a little girl was exactly what I needed to be doing. I just started it later in life.
Right.
But trot right now is actually, I mean, it's amazing to see. I love horses and I love to be outside, and I wish I could afford to like buy property and have all types of animals on it. So that's like a fantasy. So it's kind of a win-win for me because I'm out there seeing how we're helping people. And but yet to get to be around horses and outside and fresh
air. Well, you're talking all about what my next question was going to be, because we were going to run out of time soon. But what does trot not only do for riders, but God, what's it do for volunteers?
You know, we call it our magical place. It's amazing how if you have, you can go out there and you can have a headache. You can be in a bad mood. You can be a little depressed about something that didn't go right yesterday or whatever. And the minute you get onto that property and you see what you're doing for these kids, and you see the smiles on their faces and the vets,
yeah,
and just the whole thing, it makes all of your stuff go away because you realize that what you're dealing with is nothing as to what these parents are going through and what these kids are, and the strength and the courage that these kids are just to get up on this big animal that is so large. And these kids are coming out of wheelchairs and can't walk, and they're being put on this monstrous horse, and how excited they are. And it's so cute to watch them because we'll trot, and they love that. You would think they would be afraid of the bouncing and the going along, and they're like, they're clapping and they're just going crazy. And they're like, more. They just love that.
Like
and
a dinosaur to them.
Oh, right? Absolutely. But they love it. And to watch them come out of their shell, you have to forget about what's wrong in your world.
There
and
you
so
go.
For that hour or 2 hours or however long you're there, it helps you as much as, if not more, than it does the people that you're there to help.
It's incredible. Incredible. And, Brooke, when it comes to the Restore, I want to touch on that briefly because TMM does so much in relation to family services with all these other things. But this is where people can help a lot,
yes,
right?
Huge. And this is where a large portion of our revenue stream for our programs comes from the Restore.
Okay.
And it's TMM's Restore. It's over at 22nd and Country Club, where we sell major home improvement items. And those items have all been donated to us. So we'll take anything. We'll take furniture from your house or from your office.
Not just appliances. Hammers. Not just hammers and nails or saws.
No, we'll take
like
those too.
Hardware store.
That's great.
I can't
so
say
can
no.
And that, any idea of the turnover of that?
You know, we have a pretty, it turns over pretty quickly because it's also a place where people can go and keep their house healthy and safe, but, you know, they,
at a reduced rate
because a lot of people can't go to Home Depot or Lowe's,
right.
You know, and so they have an option to go there. So we also have box trucks. We'll come pick them up. Free pickups. We'll pick up on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Also, we'll do clothing. We are the largest distributor of free clothing within the community. We work with all the other agencies in town to distribute clothing. And we do men's, women's, children's, back to school. We also do a lot of work clothing. We work with a lot of agencies that work with DES to get people employed. And so please, we take not only furniture, but clothing, whatever you can think of, call us at our Restore and we can get you hooked up so that we can get that item for you.
So all you've got to do, okay, is go to www.tmmfs.
That's correct.
.org. All right. Yes. We'll come back on that before we go. But that's all you've got to do, because quite frankly, you won't remember all of this. But if you do that, you can sit there in your podgies at night at 2 a.m. having a nice hot chocolate or cocoa, whatever turns you on. And then you can really have a good look at it all.
Mark, can I just say one thing really quick?
Sure, my dear. What
you know, I think the one thing that everybody sitting at this table, I know for sure, Gemma, Brooke and myself, it's volunteers, because people don't realize that nonprofits they operate on volunteers.
Big
I know
time.
Trot is constantly looking for volunteers. Mm-hmm. We currently need volunteers. I'm sure Gemma does. I know TMM does because I sit on the board there.
Well, it's not just money. It's volunteers.
Yes, it is volunteers, because being a nonprofit, you want the monies to go back towards programs and the good of what you're trying to do for the kids and that type
whatever.
Of thing. So
yep.
people out there that might be listening or hear this later, please look up all these organizations and excuse me, and try to volunteer, contact us and let us know, because nonprofits can't make it without the volunteers.
No, you're right. Yeah. And thank you.
And they
you
don't
for that.
Have to be an expert in the field.
No, not
I mean,
at all.
We need help just
everybody gets trained.
Up some landscaping. Yeah.
Incredible. Mm-hmm. Now, because time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it? Gemma Thomas, you're passionate about supporting our community, volunteered in a program for adults with intellectual and development disabilities, teaching individualized adaptive yoga classes.
I did do that.
To bring movement into their daily routines, right?
Yep, I sure did.
Well, one of my station hosts here on BRX, she has a show called Wise Owl Wellness.
Oh, cool.
And she had four various yoga teachers on her show just yesterday, and they were talking about just how big yoga has become in the USA.
Yeah, I in fact just did a presentation on how to integrate some of the yogic theories and principles into fundraising. So Brooke and I might have to talk about that.
There you go. I want you on campus to teach some of the kids.
You're marvelous, you know. And if all of this still isn't enough for you, you continue to give back to our community as a member of the Children's Museum Board of Directors, the Care Fund Tucson Advisory Council, the Children's Action Alliance, Southern Arizona Advisory Council, Ronald McDonald House. Got your nose in there too, right?
You know, I keep
Where do you get
busy.
All this time? I mean,
there's 24 hours in a day.
There's always those overachievers.
Yeah. I was going to say, when on earth? Well, ladies and gentlemen, she's going to get some time off soon because she's getting married.
Yeah.
And she's going to have to take some time off. So all the best with that one, my dear.
Thank you, Mark.
Young Kathleen, before we go.
Yes.
Before we go, all the things that you've done, what exactly is a breakthrough coach?
Oh, that's such a great question. I had to make that up because I was trying to decide to talk about what I do. And basically what I do is I help people have easier lives. So whatever happens, what happens when we try something new? Whenever we try something new, we uncover areas that we're not comfortable with that we mm-hmm. have to move into in order to try something new. And what happens is blocks come up. Fears come up, fear of failure, fear of success, fear of being rejected, fear of making a mistake. All these fears come up, and often they can actually paralyze us in terms of getting in our way of what we really want to do and fulfilling our purpose. And so I see this over and over again. And I have found in my searches, because that happened to me, you know, I would find myself, oh, I want to do this really cool thing. And boom, something would come up and I'd find myself frustrated, procrastinating, all these things. And so I asked, and when you ask, it is given, I came across some amazing tools that allowed me to move really quickly through blocks and find out how to do that. And so as soon as I did that, I realized, you know, I want more of this. I want it to be easier. I was in a nonprofit, working in a nonprofit in leadership development when I first started coming across these tools. Mm-hmm. And so I started using them, you know, with my clients, you know, we were a nonprofit that developed other nonprofits and teaching other nonprofits how to run, and started using these with the leaders in those nonprofits and just having incredible results. Mm-hmm. And so when our grant, talk about grants, our government grant got canceled, and we had to have layoffs, and I was one of those people that got laid off, I said, what can I do with my life now? My dream job just ended. And, I decided I'm going to become a coach and I'm going to use these tools. And who do I want to work with? I decided I wanted to work with emerging leaders and business owners and entrepreneurs, because if I can make a difference in their lives, they can make a difference in hundreds and thousands of other people's lives.
That's true. Right.
And so
they'll pay it forward.
Right. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so if I can help, you know, people be successful as they have the potential to be, in a way that's quick and easy and fast and fun, as opposed to the struggle and, you know, just, I don't know if you've ever experienced that block where you know there's something and you got to do it and you even know how to do it and you don't know why you're not doing it. That is the key piece that says that's an unconscious fear. And when those things come up, we don't know what to do with it and we can't really solve them consciously. You know, we can think about it all day long. We can make lists. We can, you know, like, do affirmations, all these things.
Put all these messages on mirrors.
And it doesn't work very well, you know. And so there are tools that can help get rid of those things really quickly, like in an hour. It's amazing.
That's pretty cool, really. So you're getting great results then for these clients.
Absolutely. People are able to do things that they never, that they've always wanted to do, but haven't been able to do on their own. And so, and then I actually teach people how to use these tools.
I was
going to
say, do you find it's harder for that you help women more than men? Maybe because they've been raising kids and they haven't been in the workforce for a long time and it's hard to break back in and all they've done is raise kids. I mean, not all they've done, because we all know that's a terrific job.
That's an incredible job, yeah.
You know, after they've raised the kids, maybe they're empty nesters and they've been out of the workforce for 20 years or whatever. And they're like, oh my gosh, what do I do now? And they don't know how to get started and they are fearful.
Confidence.
You know, absolutely. Right, their confidence level is not in that area anymore because they've been out of it for so long. And some of them may have never worked. They went from school to getting married and immediately having kids, and that's been their life.
And that's really true. And I find that those I have clients in that particular genre. A lot of my clients are clients that are changing careers.
Yep, and that
so
too.
They're either mm-hmm. getting ready. Some of them are retiring. Mm-hmm. Some of them are like, okay, I need to change something.
They've been laid off,
or like myself, they were mm-hmm. laid off, and so they're trying something really new, and it gets really scary. It's not as easy. We find it's not as easy as we thought it was going to be.
Oh, it is very scary. And I went from grocery management to the police department finally, and that was like a huge, huge step.
Mm. Right, and even if we have the skills, this is the piece. Even if we have the mental skills to do this, mm-hmm. it's the unconscious mind
yep.
that
created the unknown.
Where the fears lie. Right. And those can get
those
in
blockages.
Our way,
mm-hmm.
those blocks. And so if we can get rid of those, then we can use the skills that we do have to get and move forward.
Well, you know, people used to say the only way you could do all of this was go to hypnotherapists and so on and get all that done. But a lot of people don't want to do that. So you've got something here that makes it a little easier.
It is easier. And hypnotherapists work in sort of the same area, the mind, that I do. Mm. But what I do is I let the person that I work with lead. So I'm not putting anything into their mind. I'm not changing their mind for them. I'm actually allowing them to reveal to themselves what their problem is and what the solution they want to have. Mm-hmm. And then we make it happen together. And so it's self-led and it's tailored exactly unique to each person.
And that's pretty good. Now, your site is being built right now as we talk, so people can't really go to a site right now.
Right.
But they can find you where?
Well, I just started yesterday because Mark encouraged me to do this, and I'm like, okay,
well,
I'll do it.
You had a block. Someone had to do something about it.
I know. And so I have, well, it's true, and I've been working on that one.
There you go.
I created a group, a Facebook group. It's called Big Picture Clear Path. And if you go there, there's a really great exercise I've posted on that
path. Big Picture Clear Path, right?
Right. It's the same name as my business. Mm. And I posted an exercise there about values, mm. you know, how to determine what your personal values are. And that's really, really important, because when it comes down to confidence and creating our own integrity and our own authenticity, knowing your values is really important. So if you go there and ask to join the group, I'll let you in. And once you're in, you can do that exercise and really, you know, get a good handle on your values.
Well, this will be great, because we'll also get to do those videos later on. You'll be able to do them live with Facebook with people that are doing
right.
the classes. A lot of things I've thought of, I haven't told you yet. Don't worry about it. Big Picture Clear Path is the name. Look for that on Facebook. We've got to get out of here. It's late. But here's the deal. Because you're all so successful, I admire you implicitly. You're on No Glass Ceiling because you're leaders as women and entrepreneurs, but also key roles of business where men only used to do that before. You know, it was taboo for a woman to do those things. That's not the case anymore. I want to ask you one question each in closing, and you've only got a minute to answer it.
Pressure's on.
Not looking at anybody. But here's the deal. I'll start with you, Kathleen. If you had it all over again, what's been your biggest mistake?
Oh, my gosh. Hesitation. I think hesitating, you know, maybe that's why I do the work I do now, because I understand where hesitation comes from now,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, not saying yes and not just taking the plunge. I do it most of the time, but there have been a few times when I haven't done it.
Fair enough. Because there are young women listening to the show that need the motivation, and guys too, for that matter. Gemma, what would be yours?
Yeah, similar to Kathleen, I think not going for the bigger things soon enough. I read a statistic, and I'm going to totally botch it, but it was something about the difference between men and women applying for a job. Men can be 50% qualified for a job and just go for it, whereas women really need to feel like they're at least 90% qualified even to apply. And I think more women should apply for things that they're less qualified for.
Wow, that's fascinating. I've never heard of that before. Interesting. Brooke, what about you? What's been the biggest mistake you've made?
Sometimes second-guessing yourself and like in your vision on what you want for yourself. You know, we have a lot of society who tells us how to do things. And so, you know, if it's part of your passion, don't second-guess yourself. You know, if that's really, you know, in your gut that that's what
trust
you want,
your intuition.
Trust your intuition and you'll never be unhappy. You know, you might have bad days, but you'll never be unhappy. And not all of us are the same cookie cutter.
That's
and
it.
Understand that just because you want a different path doesn't make you any less wrong or right. Or
that's very, very good information. And last but not least, Rebecca Knoll.
You know, and this, I don't want it to sound egotistical, but I don't really look at anything as a mistake. So for me to say what was my biggest mistake, I don't really look at any of it as a mistake. I pretty much have done what I wanted to do. It may have taken me a little longer to get there. So probably the least thing would be, and I don't consider it a mistake, would be to have gone into law enforcement sooner. But I feel like there's a reason for everything. So for whatever reason, God took me on a different path. And I was supposed to raise those kids and I was supposed to help them and I was supposed to be there for them when other people could not. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of that. So I don't look at it as a mistake.
Okay.
But
okay.
Anyway.
No, it's
in
a learning
case,
lesson. It makes us that individual.
Everything does.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, I hope you gained some good knowledge out of that today, some good advice. Trust you'll enjoy it many times over. It's on the podcast. It ain't going anywhere. It's not going anywhere either. So it'll be there for you. Okay. Today's guest, we can't. Kathleen Gonzalez, Big Picture, Clear Path. Look for it on Facebook. And I think you might be surprised with that one. Gemma Thomas, wonderful children's clinics, you know, all the work done for the clinics, TMM, TMM with Brooke, of course, but the children's clinics. We wish you well, Gemma, with your marriage coming up very soon.
Thank you
for the work you do and for what you do.
Thanks,
it's very, very nice. And, of course, Brooke Nowak. What nationality is that, incidentally?
Polish.
It is Polish.
Yeah.
Ah.
You wouldn't know, by looking at me. Polish and German and English.
She's the Vice President of Development and Community Relations for TMM Family Services. Boy, do they do some work in the community, and thank God. And Rebecca Knoll, you've heard from, of course, and Rebecca's retired, done wonderful things, but now is working so hard for Trot and helping these lovely little children get a new start in life.
She helps us a lot, too.
She's
herself.
Brace me up. Absolutely. Thank you.